You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca, Alberta's only regulated online gambling website. Use the promo code, and you get a new one every month, Greger50, and you'll get a free $50 play only at PlayAlberta.ca. Joins us now, Strutty. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you making out, buddy?
Oh, I'm all right. Were you chuckling when they actually asked you if Toronto's team is better this year than last year? Like, they lost a 100-point player. How the hell are they better?
Yeah, you know what? It's a funny thing because I think everyone knew it probably had to happen. Just the way it happened. Like, they should have traded Marner at least one of them a year, maybe him and Nylander a year or two ago, and got something back that they could hold on to. So they get Nick Waugh, who, you know, I think a serviceable bottom six player, a guy that can maybe moonlight up a little bit. You know, Scotty Larton, who they got last year, didn't work out. I expect him to be better. But is John Tavares going to score 40 goals again this year? That's where I have a hard time. And then their D, they're not the most puck-moving group of D around, right? They're trying to be robust and hard, and I get that. But you need guys to move the puck up. And if you go back and watch the Oilers in the playoffs, when Klingberg started going and Bouchard and Wallman, these guys all started moving the puck. That's when the Oilers kind of got their offense going.
Yeah. You look at – now, speaking of Toronto, they had a goal power play coach for 1 year. McFarland came in. He was hired by Babcock. Babcock got fired, but McFarland stayed on that year, and the power play improved quite a bit. Now, the new coach then came in and got his own guy, which happens. McFarland, when he went into Florida for a few years, they had success on the power play. The rest of the areas weren't good, but he's had success on the power play, Struds. We'll start there. How much different do you think he can do, you know, to just kind of keep the power play fresh, and more so maybe, you know, look at helping out the second unit?
Well, first off, how do you think he feels when he walks into a group that has been, you know, one of the best for the last whatever many years, half dozen years, whatever it is? So he can only get worse, right? It can't get better. It's already been great. So now he's got to get in there. And I think that Gullickson was obviously, what he did was good, and those guys have a feeling what they want to do. But maybe a fresh set of eyes wouldn't be the worst thing. You know, maybe he can tweak things a little bit and move it. Not that Gullickson didn't have that ability, but someone who from the outside has been watching this power play, I'm sure where he was stationed, he would try to steal things from this power play. So he's seen it. He's looked at it. So he may have some new ideas to what they can do. But I've been saying this for a while. They've got to get two power play units going. And it's not that the first power play isn't as good. It's that second group isn't getting their beaks wet. They're not getting involved in the game. They're not scoring. They're not able to find it. You have to let guys on that second unit find some meaningful power play time so they can get points as well. It's important for them and for the team. So can the coaching staff can they get the top unit on board and say, we might pull your minutes down a bit to get you a bit of rest and then give these guys more chance to score? So McFarland's got his hands full, does have a history of running power plays in the NHL, but this is a really good one. Now, they had good players at other, but to step in there and sit down in front of Connor, Leon, Bouchard, Nuge, and Hyman. Okay, guys, I got a new idea. I'm sorry, we've been doing the same thing for years. Well, we're here. We're going to try something new.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny, though? I think, like, I talked to Glenn. It's funny because I talked to Glenn Gullickson about that. And mm-hmm. He said, those guys are big on communication. All he said was, if you come to them with an idea, they're open for it, but it can't be a lame idea. Right? And
yeah,
so, like
yeah.
He talked to me. He told me, remember the play against LA in game three? Off the faceoff?
Yeah.
Where they had Bouchard come in. And so that was a play that Gullickson saw. And then they talked and they're like, hey, we're going to do it. But originally, and then Drysdale said, well, let me carry it. And then he was the one who made the play to Bouchard, right? And Bouchard dropped it to Drysdale, and then he just kept going, right. And then Drysdale hit him. And that was a play that literally they had seen, right? Gullickson talked, but then they discussed it in the room, and then one guy's like, well, hey, you know, Drysdale's, because originally he wasn't going to be the guy being the passer, right? But they changed it up, and obviously it worked very well. And so I think when you've had as much success as they've had, if you can come up with an idea they haven't thought of, Strutty, well, now all of a sudden you've got their attention.
Well, that's the challenge. You just said it. Find something they haven't thought of. I mean, these are ultra offensive, creative, smart, you know, hockey sense off the charts players. So are you going to come in and find something that they haven't thought of or tried or done? And I think that's where I go back to that piece about being a little bit, you know, intimidated or uncomfortable. It's not easy to think of something new. So you know, I have a hard time believing they move people out of their positions they have currently, because I think they're all ideally suited for what they're doing. But out of that setup, can they find a new way to do things? Can they find a, you know, a way to incorporate different plays or guys maybe moving a little bit more? And that's the challenge for McFarland, because, you know, they have been together a long time. They have been doing really well on it. But you're not, it's not like it's a new group of players. You're just going to be like, oh, let's just do this, because they haven't, they've been together in so long. So this to me is the most interesting hire and what he can bring to the power play.
Jason Strudwick joins us. Then you look at Mark Stewart and the penalty kill. 2024, unbelievable. Like the playoffs was really, it's not going to be repeatable to be minus one in 25 games on the penalty kill. Like that is, I don't care. You find a 25 game stretch in the regular season, no one's ever minus one. You look at the orders, and then they went from that to being the second worst all time of any team who's played 10 games in the playoffs. Only the 2021 Islanders out of 489 teams was worse. So they're going to change some things. They lost some personnel, Stretti, and no one can tell me that Desharnais, Cece, and Ekholm weren't a huge loss in the playoffs. It can't just be the structure of the system, but they are going to try to tweak some things. What do you make of Stewart, and what would be some things you'd look at to change or tighten up on the penalty kill for next year?
Well, you nailed it with the fact that Ekholm coming back would be huge. He's a big penalty killer, and he understands what they're doing. And then I think they have lost a few bodies. They got to find a way to get new people in there. And I think getting that size and speed back is pretty important as well. Now, you know, I think they're talking about, Knobloch was talking about trying to get, you know, the young guys, Savoy and Howard, on either a power play or a penalty kill. Mm-hmm. And I think we're probably pretty clear which one is going on which. But, you know, Savoy's not the longest guy. And he's quick and he's fast, but he's not the longest guy. So, again, it'll take him as much space. And just getting in the way makes a big deal. You think about Vegas when they're winning Stanley Cups. Their 60 weren't exactly rocket ships, but man, they took up a lot of space and it got in the way and they're knocking pucks down or hits you, clips you, whatever. So I would suspect that they'll find a way to try to get the group together. But the big thing is some continuity would be really huge. And I'm talking probably more 5-on-5 here than 5-on-4. But try to get some pairings together that you're going to leave together for a little bit, give them a chance to go. Because, you know, when Wallman came, it was pretty much, you know, although Ekholm got hurt, but it was Ekholm, Bouchard, and everyone was playing with everyone. You know, can they find a little bit of continuity somewhere on that back end? And then is it, you know, do you throw Wallman beside Nurse? Or then Kulak gets whomever? Or is it Kulak on the right side? Like, those are all things I think that Kulak or Stewart's had a front row seat for that all year. Well, for 2 years, really. And so what does he do to make it his own, to change things, to make it a little bit more stable back there?
Yeah, I think it will be kind of fascinating. Were you surprised at all that they kind of went down one coach on the bench? Because Coffey's not coming back. The goalie coach isn't on the bench. So they're just going to have three. I don't think it's a big deal, Stretti, but you were on NHL benches. Like, do you need four coaches?
It seemed crowded. Yeah. It seems crowded. And I think the reason they had Mark Stewart down there is because they were grooming him to be a bench coach, you know, at some point. And it's hard to get that feeling of the bench when you're up above with the earpiece in your yelling down or barking down instructions. So I think that maybe all along they knew at some point Paul Coffey was going to step aside, and the plan was for Mark Stewart to move in. So he needed to get that bench feel. But I'll tell you this, I liked it 1-2-3. I don't need, you need the head coach in the middle. You have the guy running the forwards, and then the guy running the D. And then at times the head coach would come over the top and kind of say, nope, I want this guy or I want this group or whatever. But otherwise, four just feels really, really crowded and busy on the bench. So I think there was a plan, and now the plan is to have three like most teams do.
Yeah. And that makes sense to me. I don't think it's a huge thing, especially because Coffey wasn't, and I talked to Paul about it, like he didn't do a ton of video work. There was a little bit, but not a ton. He did more of coaching in-game. Now a lot of players today, they like the video coaching. Now, it all depends. You've talked about it, Strudy. It all depends how it's presented and in how much. You can die by having video, right? Like, I think you had too much video, you said, at times in your career. So you got to strike that right balance, correct?
there are some sessions that would have been shorter to watch all three Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, than the video we were watching while the coach dragged out all these different shows or all these different plays. So, you know, I think when you're going over video, especially with the group, less is more. You know, there's a play you want to do, show it a couple times. A play you don't want to do, show it a couple times. We don't need 20 clips of the same thing. You know, if that's the case, then, you know, maybe your coaching is not working or the players you have aren't thinking. On a one-on-one basis, I'd be more willing to go over it one-on-one over more clips. Like if you want to show me 10 clips as a one-on-one, yeah, let's have that because they're all relative to me. When you're showing 20 clips to a group, it might be one for each player, but you're losing me. After a certain number of clips, I'm gone. I'm not listening anymore. I know people, oh, they're professional athletes. Yeah, well, I'm sure some of you listened to a bit of meetings before where you've checked out in the first 5 minutes. So I think that it depends on how many people are in that room. And I think that coaches are starting to figure that out, whereas before it was long. It was like trilogy long of the number of clips we watched.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, that I'm sure you're just like, okay. And the other thing is, Strati, like you play – and at NHL players, there's only so much information you can give them, right? So then I think – and you coach a lot of young kids. I think, you know, I went to a coaching clinic. And they said the biggest mistake coaches make at minor hockey level is they overcoach kids and they give them too much information before a game. And now the kid's completely rattled. Doesn't know, you know, he's thinking about 10 different things.
I had Tom Randy a couple times as a coach, and I liked that he put three things on the board and he beat the hell out of those three things.
Okay.
And so you're looking for your three biggest issues you want to do tonight. So maybe one is let's be physical. This is NHL, obviously. Or number two might be, you know, D-men get back to the puck quick. And then forwards get pucks and bodies to the blue paint. And then you just beat the hell out of those things. Because as a coach, if you do those three, if your team does those three things well, you're probably going to win the game in your mind, if that's what you think the difference is. But I've also been on teams where it was like 10 things. I couldn't remember past five what it was. And like, what was number eight? Number eight. I don't know what number four was. Yeah. I can't keep track of every single thing. So, and this is for minor coaches too. Just put three things on the wall and just, and then, the big thing is, too, you want to make sure that if you're going into a game on Saturday, you have a practice Thursday, work on the things Thursday you want to touch on Saturday. So, yeah, for minor hockey, you got to work on your skills and all that stuff. But if you want to have a good forecheck, spend 12 minutes working on your forecheck and really get the details down, the vocabulary, so you and your coaches are all saying the same thing on the bench. Hey, get your feet moving. You know, press the guy against the wall. Or stall the guy, whatever it is, make sure you're using the same vocabulary. So in the end of games, the kids are like, oh, yeah, I remember he talked about that on Thursday. I find some coaches don't practice what they want to work on for Saturday in the game, Thursday, and then they're yelling at kids to do something they don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So pick three things, do it in practice, then practice, show it in the game, and then, okay, it worked. Two of them checked the box. Good, let's find two new things. So now we have three new things we're working on for the practice, and that's how you keep improving.
Jason Strudwick joins us. Strudy, looking at you know, the orders, and I want to get your thoughts on their defense corps. And Regula, who no one really knows, but I've talked to a lot of people, like he's 24, he's not much older than, you know, he's basically him and Emberson are very similar in age. And then there's the big wild card in Leppinen, but the guy scored 61 points in the Finnish Elite League, set records. Like he's obviously got some skill. What interests you about the decor and like Emberson, Stetcher, Regula, and maybe the wild card in Leppinen?
Well, I think we know that there's five are going to play, right?
Yes.
Those five, the top five are going to play. So now, those guys you just highlighted, that's four guys fighting for, you know, 82 games times 15 minutes, roughly, is what that guy might get, right? Around 12 to 15 minutes, something like that. And I think it's really important for Ty Emerson to come out and have a really good start to the season. I really believe that because we know what Troy Stetcher can do, and he's the steady guy. You know what he's getting, but they always want to keep developing their younger players. Because the other two, the Finn and then Regula, those to me are massive wild cards. So for those two guys, they've got to have really good preseasons. I would treat that preseason to for me, if they're both able to play and they're healthy, I would treat it like it's the if I play four games, the four most important games of my career, because I'm trying to earn a game in the regular season. Then you get that game in the regular season, treat that like the most important game. And just keep doing that because you're trying to build a resume and a case of why you should be on this team or play ahead of the other two guys who were there for the run last year. So Setcher, I think we know what he can bring. But the other three, Emerson included, we have no idea what they're going to do. So they have to come out and play really, really well from the drop of the first puck in training camp right through the end and then that first game. It's going to be so, so important for those guys to try to make a case for themselves.
Yeah, I think it's hugely important. And this will be the last year, Strutty, of 8 preseason games for the Oilers. Some teams have 6, but the Oilers have 8. And then next year, it's only going to be 4 with a maximum of 2 preseason games for players who play 100 games or more. I think the harsh truth that some people don't really want to see sometimes, Strutty, is there's only 3 or 4 guys that are really on the bubble that can make your team every year outside your regulars. That's just a fact. Right. At least, you know, to start it because of contracts and waivers and everything else. So you know, I'm not sold that it's going to be that big of a difference. But what about players only having 2 exhibition games? Is this like music to their ears or do you think they'll want more? Yeah.
No, I think I shared with you before, like 2-3 games, I'm good to go. Like it's because you got to remember everyone's in the same boat. It's not like the Calgary Flames are playing 20 games and we got to play them game 2 and we've only played 1 or 2, right? Like everyone's going to be in the same boat. I think it gives a chance for everyone to make sure, well, one, they get through, you know, training camp healthy, which usually happens. But I am disappointed for that guy who kind of comes out of nowhere and plays well. I know they're few and far between. You made that case, Greg, but you know, building a case for yourself to get into the lineup game 1, it's hard to do in 60 minutes. You know, 120, maybe you can do it. But it's really hard to make that happen. So for these young guys now, I think it just, you know, young players trying to get, make a name for themselves, the practice now becomes even more important in training camp because you're trying to let people know and show them what you can do. Let's say you're, you know, like I was a 3rd rounder, you come in, no one really, we got this guy. What's his name? James Sturdwick or the Turdwick. No one really cares. They're looking at their 1st and 2nd rounders. So now you got to come in and you got to let everyone know that not just the team, the GM and the coaches, you got to let the players know what you're like that you can play because players talk. Oh, geez, who's this guy? Who's this guy coming in here and doing this or that? So, you know, easing your way into a training camp to me is never a good idea because you're not making a name. Now, if you're a veteran, yeah, ease your way in. But if you're a guy with a very small amount of NHL games or none, you've got to build something for you so other people know who you are. And that's a short, you know, 120 minutes. And in that 120, you might only get 20 minutes total. That's pretty hard to make a case, but now you got to. And everyone's got to make that case for themselves.
Yeah, no, very true. I think it was Strudmark was actually the name that they used.
Yeah, no, they didn't. No. Stud, I think it was Stud.
Oh, it's one of the greatest nicknames ever. Oh, God, I love it. Strutty, have yourself a great Tuesday. Maybe we'll see you bright and early tomorrow for some mall walking.
Buddy, I was impressed. Greg's and I ran into each other at the mall the other day, and this guy comes flying in like he was being chased by the devil. Like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, it's just jogging and mall walking. I'm like, what? I couldn't believe it. I really respected you had the headband on and the light weights. Although, go up from the 2 to 3 pounder. You're ready for it, Greg's.
Hey, you weren't supposed to tell that part of the story. Shh, you're ruining it. We'll see you tomorrow, buddy. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. See ya.